So we all know that water is essential for life, don't we? It makes up a huge part of our body. We need it to do everything. We need it for our food, for our drink. We need it to exercise. We need it to be healthy. And although there's so much water on the planet, as we heard in that quiz, we can only drink about 2.5% of it because most of it is locked up in the sea, or it's locked up in the ice caps, or it's far underground. And we're very lucky in this country because we can just turn on the tap and it's there. But that's not the same for many people in the world. So I want to know, what have you used water for today? Shout some answers at me.
Shower.
Shower.
Teeth.
Teeth.
Coffee.
Coffee. Flushing the toilet.
Squash.
Drinking squash.
Water.
Making tea.
Cleaning
your teeth, yeah. I hope we all cleaned our teeth this morning. Pardon?
Cleaning the windscreen
on the car, we did, didn't we? Maybe you used it to heat the water in your shower as well, through your central heating system. I don't know if anyone's only washing today. Probably not, it's a Sunday.
I did.
Yeah. Okay, so we all use water all the time. Often we don't think about it. So what's it like for life without water? So I'm sure you know, and as we heard, for many people there's no water nearby. How many people was it? 785 million people do not have clean water close to their homes. So lots of people have to walk to get water. And if you lived in a country like Mozambique, like these people on the screen, they walk for 2 hours a day to get water. Some people walk a lot further than that. So I thought, a lot of the time it's girls that have to go and walk to get the water, because the men are out working, the boys are probably out working or at school. So I thought I'd ask Charlotte and Izzy what you might do if you had 2 hours spare every day where you know, didn't have to go and collect water. What do you do in those 2 hours? I think when you first get up in the morning before you go to school, what are you doing?
Writing.
Yeah. Doing reading, doing writing, maybe playing on your phone, is he? Yeah. Oh, you might be doing some homework after school instead of walking to get water. You might be playing with friends. So these girls are missing out on an awful lot. Okay, so dirty water as well. So a lot of the time these girls will walk for 2 hours, and then when they get there, this is what they are collecting. So it's water from a dirty stream or a dug well in the ground where it kind of wells up. And lots of people are going there to collect water. So the ground is getting churned up, and there's, as you can see in the background, there's livestock using that for their drinking water as well. So the water that's being collected isn't clean either. Which is where you end up with the diseases and the 800 children dying a day from waterborne diseases. So I thought we would hear from what this little girl Mulu has to say, and I thought I'd ask Charlotte to read out what it's like for her to collect water. So this is an actual quote from this little girl Mulu, who lives in Ethiopia.
Collecting water is the chore I hate the most, yet I have to do it at least 3 times a day. Before school, right after school, and just before it gets too dark. The river is down there in the valley, which means I have to walk up the hill with the heavy jerry can on my back. As I leave the house to go to the river, I already think about how tired I am going to be by the time I get back home. It leaves me with a pain in my chest and my shoulder where the strap rests, but I know my family needs the water. We need at least 10 jerry cans between our animals and us, so I have to fetch at least some of it to help my mother.
Thank you. All right. So water isn't the only problem, and WaterAid as a charity does a lot in terms of providing toilets as well. So life without safe toilets is not great either. So this is a picture of a school, again, in Ethiopia. And these were the only toilets that the school had. Okay, so there's the block on the left is for the girls, and the block on the right is for the teachers. It's a girls' school. How many people do you think are using these toilets? Well, how many people go to the school? So there's two toilets in that one on the left. Yeah, I'll tell you, 1,300 girls use those toilets and 71 teachers use the other one. Do you think the toilets would be clean to use?
No.
Probably not, no. So there is some good news, and I know my dad's a big fan of good news in development. So since the year 2000, 2.7 billion people now have toilets of their own. So that's people that didn't have toilets now have. So we've had 2.7 billion people in the last 22 years have got access to a toilet. So it's really good. But there's still 1.7 billion people. So that's one in five people on the planet that don't have a toilet in their own house. So yeah, if we keep going at the same rate, we'll be doing well. So I know the kids have already found the colouring, which is great. And there's a very difficult crossword about all about water, so I haven't got the answers to it. You might need to take it home and do some Googling. All right, so now I'm going to talk for a little bit about the project in Nepal, which I work as part of and where I went to visit. It's called the Beacon Project, and the reason for that name is that we want to do something really well in one town, and then that can kind of shine to the rest of Nepal, and we can kind of work with the government and the organisations in Nepal to show how it can be done well in one place, and then they can replicate it in other places. So the town is called Lahan, and when you think of Nepal, you think of big mountains, the Himalayas, but the town of Lahan is very different from that. It's near the border of India. It's in the lowlands. It's a very flat landscape, so it's quite a lot like the east of England. And the Beacon Project is a partnership with Anglian Water, who you probably all know, maybe with the exception of Anne, who lives in London. But we're all Anglian Water customers here in the east of England. They look after our sewerage. And Anglian Water are actually one of the founding partners of WaterAid as a charity back in 1981. And they've been raising money for WaterAid for many years. But about 5 years ago, they decided they'd like to do something more than just write a cheque every year, that they'd like to get more deeply involved with WaterAid's work. So they approached WaterAid and said, can we give some of our technical knowledge to a project? And that's where the Beacon Project grew from. So I'm actually employed by WaterAid, but Anglian Water pay my salary. Thank you very much, Anglian Water. and that's not through customer bills, that's through all the fundraising they do. So they do an awful lot of fundraising through staff events. So their members of staff raise money for WaterAid. So Lahan itself, there's a picture here of one of the chaps that works for the water company in Nepal, in Lahan. And behind him is a big yellow water tower. Very similar to the one in Caister that we drive past all the time. But in Nepal, they paint all the government buildings bright yellow. So wherever you go, all the schools are bright yellow, the hospitals, the water towers. So you know what's owned and looked after by the government. So this is one of their water towers in the town where we work. Lahan is kind of a small to medium-sized district in a similar size to Great Yarmouth Borough, really. It has quite a small town right in the middle, which is a very densely urban kind of town, bustling marketplaces, lots of little motorbikes and rickshaws racing around, loads of people, loads of cows and goats all over the place. And then it's surrounded by these kind of big flat fields, which are mainly kind of rice paddies, and they grow lots of mangoes. So it's a really good place for mangoes, and I was there during mango season, which was lucky. So Lahan does already have a water network, which when we say water network, we mean all the pipes that go under the streets connecting to people's taps. But that was only right in the middle of the town. Didn't go out to people that lived on the outskirts. And the network is in a very bad condition, and people might get water for a couple of hours in the morning, and if they're lucky, a couple of hours in the afternoon. And before we were involved, none of that water was treated. It's sucked out the ground through a borehole pump and put into the pipes and comes out the tap. And you get what you get, basically, in terms of quantity and quality. So Beacon wanted to come in and help improve that network, working very closely with the government and with the water company in that town. Okay, so now we're going to have a video, hopefully, which can summarise what's happened much quicker and more better than I can. All right, so this is a picture of all the people that have employment through the Beacon Project in Lahan. So there's loads of people. There's 6 people that are directly employed by WaterAid. They're all Nepali people, and most of them live and work in the town. And 14 of them are from a local charity called DJKYC, which stands for something in Nepali that I can't pronounce, but they specialise in working with Dalit communities. Do we know what Dalit people are? So in the Hindu religion, there's a caste system. You've heard of the caste system, different layers of kind of classes of people. And right at the bottom, there's this group of people called the Dalits, who are literally means the untouchables. So they're the lowest of the low. And if you're a Dalit person, you can't touch someone that isn't a Dalit person. And this discrimination still happens in Lahan. The Dalit people have to live in their own communities. They're not allowed to walk up streets where people that aren't Dalits live. They have to go to separate schools. It is now illegal in the Nepali law to discriminate based on caste, but obviously it's very hard to get rid of something which has been part of a culture for thousands of years. So the lived reality for Dalit people is still very difficult. So we work closely with this charity who go into these communities and try and improve life for them, really. So we're trying to prioritise water connections and toilets for people that are in Dalit communities. Okay, so this is one example of a community toilet in a Dalit community. So if you live in a Dalit family, you're probably just in a very small mud hut. There isn't space to put a toilet in your hut. So the answer to this situation is we build a toilet block in the middle of the village that people can share. So this is one toilet block that was completed last year. And it serves over 200 people that live in this little village. And they had no access to toilets before. So all of these people would have just gone in the bushes. And it's not very nice going in the bushes. It's also really unsafe, particularly for young girls and ladies. So if you can build safe and clean toilet facilities, it can really be transformational for these people. So I went to visit one of these toilet blocks that the project supported. There's 10 toilets in this building, and each of the cubicles is shared by 3 families. And they each have a key to the toilet, and they have to take responsibility for keeping it clean. And they have to pay a fee of 100 rupees a month, which is about 30p. per family, and that's to kind of pay for keeping the whole area clean and for emptying the septic tank, because there's no sewerage system. So I went to visit it, and I'm sure they'd probably cleaned it up and made it look beautiful for my visit, but it was spotlessly clean, and they were so proud of it. And we had a little meeting in a room behind. They kind of built a small community meeting room behind the toilet block, where I kind of spoke to them through an interpreter about the difference it had made to their lives. And it really has made a huge difference. That they're getting less poorly in their families. They're not having to worry about going to the toilets in the bushes in the dark. So we're doing a number of these community toilets in different places. We're trying to do 2 a year at the moment. Okay, and then I went to visit a school, which was amazing. That's where I got my hat. You can see a picture of me wearing the hat. And many scarves and beautiful marigolds, chains of marigolds they put around our necks. So this school has 632 students. And before the project came along, it had some toilets, but they were really run down. It was actually the toilets that you saw a picture of in the video very briefly. So they weren't clean. There was no kind of clean water in the school. There was no places for people to wash their hands. So what we've done is come along and refurbished the toilets, put in a biosand filter, which essentially cleans the water that they pump out of the aquifer with their hand pump. And we've built some hand washing stations, which are sinks and taps. And really importantly, put in a room in the school for the girls when they're on their periods. And this is something that was a really taboo subject in Nepal, but increasingly it's not, because the girls are talking about it more, and there's education work happening within these classes to teach boys and girls about periods. And if the girls have safe toilets and hand washing facilities, they can carry on coming to school even when they have their period. Whereas before, I spoke to a lot of the girls and they didn't come at all when they were on their periods, because there's nowhere for them to go to the toilet. So they would stay at home and lose out on a quarter of their education. So it really is a game changer if you can make these facilities good within schools. One of the girls that you can just see here standing next to me, she's the chief of the child club, which is like the school council. She's 15 years old, and she did a speech which was amazing. I mean, I couldn't understand it because it was in Nepali, but she was so lively and passionate about how having these new facilities had transformed life for her and her friends that were girls. And she was so, yeah, just so excitable about it. And she's become a champion for improving sanitation within schools in Lahan. So this group of children will go to other schools and teach them how to look after the facilities, really, how important it is that the school committees invest in these things. Okay. The other thing I did, which was less exciting but very important, was having meetings with some of the key kind of policy people and the politicians. So the yellow building in the bottom is the municipality building in Lahan, where the local government works and where the mayor sits. So we had a few meetings there, lots of kind of ceremony, lots of namastes and scarves and tea drinking, and you have to do that for about an hour before you can actually talk about water. It was very interesting seeing that different culture. But the mayor is really supportive of the work we're doing, and he's actually set up a new department in the local government for WASH, which stands for Water and Sanitation and Hygiene. So he's donated a room in the building, which you can see us all sitting on the floor, which has been redecorated. And since I visited, there's desks and chairs where he's asked all of his officers who work on water and sanitation to work in one room together. And he's also given desks for the staff from the Beacon Project to come and work there as well, because he wants to bring everyone to work together towards improving water and sanitation in the town. And that was his idea. And so because it's his idea, everyone will do it. So that's how we work, really, is kind of from the ground up. And then the other picture you can see in the kind of smarter room was in one of the hotels in the capital city, Kathmandu, where we had our Beacon board, which is the kind of important, serious meeting with the people from Anglian Water and the people from the Nepal government, where they decide what the budget's going to be for the next year and all those kind of decisions. So I was part of that meeting, which was quite stressful because it was part in the room and part across the internet. The internet wasn't very good in the hotel, so that was hard. And that was also the last day before I came home, so I was really tired by that point. Okay. There we are. Obviously, the other thing I did was go around and see all of the technology that you saw on the video, all of the borehole pumps which bring the water out of the ground. The other picture here, this is of a chlorine dosing station. So this, we've built three of these in the town, which actually will treat some of the water so that it's not just coming out the ground and going to the taps. It goes through a chlorination process, very similar to what it does in our country, to actually disinfect the water and kill off any bad germs that are in there. So now we know that all the water that's going through the pipes is at least clean. And they don't get water all day every day, but the people of Lahan now get about 4 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the evening, so they're getting more than they used to, because we've built some more boreholes and reduced the amount of leaks across the system as well. I don't understand all of this. I'm not a water engineer. But these guys are. So I was just going around taking pictures and going, oh, yes, I understand what you're talking about. it's my job to kind of try and understand it enough to write about it and put it on the website and tell our supporters. Have you got your hand up, Jacob? How big is the town? Yeah, it's kind of similar size in area to Great Yarmouth and the villages. And there's about 100,000 people that live in the whole area. But this is what people are really interested in. So what was it like when you were travelling? What did you eat? Where did you stay? So the top middle was breakfast, curry with bread. This was lunch, which was really delicious. It's called a tali, which literally means a set meal. So you get rice in the middle and little bowls of curry and lentils and vegetables. And each day there'll be something a bit different around the outside. So that was really delicious. They mainly ate chicken and mutton, but then I found out mutton is actually goat, not lamb or sheep. I didn't eat much of the goat because I saw the butchering happening on the streets and the amount of flies. And this is the speciality in Nepal, which is called momos, M-O-M-O, and they're little steamed dumplings filled with meat or vegetables. So these were chicken momos with like a spicy sauce that you dip it in. Or you could have buff momos, and I was looking at this on the menu, thinking, what does buff mean? It's water buffalo, so they eat water buffalo, not cows because they're Hindus, but water buffaloes aren't cows, so that's okay. So, yeah, that was the food. It was very nice. Okay, thank you. This was the hotel I stayed in Lahan. They don't really have any Westerners or tourists. It's not on the tourist trail at all. So I was quite a novelty being a white woman in the town, and I got stared at for about 10 days in a row, and it was like, oh, this is really weird. The hotel had been kind of checked out by the water aid team before we stayed to make sure it was safe and hygienic enough. But the bed, the mattress was about that thick and it was really uncomfortable. And the bathroom, I did have my own bathroom and it had water some of the time, which was cold, and it was full of mosquitoes and little leeches on the floor. So I didn't go in there very often. So it wasn't a luxurious trip, although when I got back to Kathmandu in the capital, they did put us in a nice hotel for a couple of days before we came home, so that was good. It was one extreme to the other. Can you do the next one? Thank you. So just some pictures of what the town was like. Like I said, there are lots of goats everywhere, which Izzy would have loved, seeing all the cute little goats, and try and not think that they're going to be dinner the next day. Cows literally wandering right past all the shops, and people would put plates of food out for the cows because cows are sacred in Hindu culture, and the cows would just wander up to the shop and have a bit to eat and then wander along to the next one, have a bit to eat. There weren't that many cars on the roads because it's not a very prosperous town, so most people get around on pedal bikes or motorbikes. And the school run is like a dad on his bike, on his motorbike, with a couple of small kids hanging off the back with no helmets, and like, oh, very potholed roads. This was one of the roads in the middle. You can just see the water tower right in the back up there. And yeah, we were trying to visit that water tower, but we couldn't get to it because the roads were so bad, even in the 4x4 vehicle. So going on this trip helped me realise how difficult it is for the team that work on the ground just to do their jobs every day. But it's very beautiful as well. So many butterflies and birds, and yeah, really lovely. Although there is a lot of pollution, particularly in the town, the urban part of the town. You see a picture here of all the rubbish in the streams and the channels. They don't really have a waste collection service. And I think in the last kind of 10 years, perhaps, the kind of single-use plastics has become an issue for them. Probably before 10 years ago, people were just buying food off the market, which had been grown in the fields, and cooking it. But now, wherever you go, there's food available in plastic packaging, but they've nowhere to put the plastic. So that was quite sad. And just kind of seeing that situation is going to probably get worse. but it's not really part of WaterAid's work. But we're still hoping that we can help the mayor, put him in contact with some other organisations that could help with waste management. Next one. Yeah, I will. I'll sort out the waste problem in the hand. In my spare time. So this is the highway through the middle of Lahan. It's actually on the east-west highway through the whole of Nepal. So there are a lot of vehicles travelling through the town, going to Kathmandu, but they don't really stop there very much. So there's lots of tractors around and mopeds and potholes. And then the other picture is kind of looking through the trees at a small Dalit community and just like the small huts that people are living in. While I was there was the beginning of the monsoon season, so we had some really massive storms, torrential downpours, and I just drove past these houses during the day and thought, how do they cope? Because they're not watertight. And you'd see the next day when the sun comes out, they'd bring out all their bedding and hang it on the fences and the hedges to dry because they'd just got wet during the night. So, yeah, it's a hard place to live. Okay, and just kind of finishing up with religion. So Nepal is a really interesting country where it's kind of between Buddhism and Hinduism. It's got strong influence from Tibet in the north and then India in the south. And the religions kind of merge. And most of the people I spoke to who I work with in Nepal are a bit of both. The kind of, you know, they may be from a Buddhist family, but they've married a Hindu family, or there's been some mingling going on, and they actually celebrate all the festivals. They're a nation of partiers. So they'll all celebrate all the Buddhist festivals, they'll all celebrate the Hindu festivals, and they're always having time off. and they eat lots of food. So, but we visited some really important... the one on the left is a really sacred Hindu temple site, and the one on the right is one of the sacred Buddhist temples in Kathmandu. So it's really interesting to see how that works for them in their day-to-day lives. And religion is very important to them, and they'll use kind of prayers and rituals regularly, and you can see from the temple the prayer flags that come down from the top, very similar to the ones I've strung up behind Heather in the back, which I brought with me. There's prayer flags everywhere. They decorate their big trees in the village with prayer flags, and so they are a very spiritual group of people, much more so than our country is, really. And I had some really good conversations with the team. This gentleman here is called Kabindra, so he's the project manager in Nepal. I'm the project manager in the UK, so we're kind of equals. He's an amazing chap, and I had lots of deep and meaningful conversations with him over dinner and travelling about what religion means to me and what it means to him. So it's really interesting getting to know people well from a different culture. Next. So, yeah, this is just the hospitality. I thought I'd finish with this because hospitality is one of Light of Life's values. And the Nepali people really know how to do hospitality. So this was the point where Kabindra had said, stop putting flowers on her neck, she won't be able to breathe, because they were just lining up, putting more flowers on. And this wasn't one bunch of flowers, this was individual flowers that people had given me, and I was kind of clustering in my hand, trying not to drop them. Everywhere you go, making a celebration of the guest is really important for them. So we had to build in extra time to all our visits to account for this hospitality wherever we went, which was wonderful. I felt very honoured and very unworthy, really, because I hadn't done any of this work. I've only been involved in the project for 6 months. I'd just come along to look at what had happened, and it was wonderful. All these little children at a primary school, they each had a little flower to give me to hold all the little flowers and say namaste to each of them. So, yeah, it was wonderful, and I learned a lot about hospitality, just taking the time that, yes, we've got so much work to do in Lahan to make life better for people, but you have to respect people and make time to get to know them and build those relationships if you're going to get anything meaningful done. So I think that's been a real lesson for the team in Anglian Water. It's a very different way of how a UK company works. It's just, let's do this as efficiently as we can, don't make time for small talk kind of thing. So the meetings where the two groups come together are very interesting. All right, is that the last slide?
Mama.
Yes, Charlotte.
How did you put the flowers together?
I don't know how they put the flowers together.
How did you? Because they gave you
I was flowers. Just holding them in my hand until I couldn't hold any more. And then I put them on a table when I sat down and listened to lots of long speeches. We're just going to do a short activity before we finish up. So I thought we started off thinking about how we use water. So we're going to finish up about how we use water ourselves again. And think about how we can be more careful about using water. And I know we've talked about these things before at church, but it's always good to have a refresh, especially as we are in such a drought at the moment. So what I thought we would do is come up with some water-saving tips between us, and then maybe you could think of one that you're going to really try and do this week and forever, hopefully, and we're going to write them down on our post-it notes and stick them on the prayer flags at the back. We're going to kind of claim the prayer flags as our prayer at the end. So let's have a bit of a chat now about some ideas, and then you can think about which ones you think you could do. So how could you save water by doing something a bit differently at home or at school or at work? Any ideas? Namaste. Right. Anne? Okay.
And to get our hot water to run first in the morning, we fill in the bucket with scotch.
Really? So that's just before the hot water comes out the tap.
Yeah.
So you can do that in your shower or your bath or your washing up bowl. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good thinking. And I know you've kind of probably thought about this because your daughter Emily, they've had problems in South Africa with water shortages. So I know they were showering in a bucket for a while, weren't they? Yeah. Standing in the bucket, well, yeah, to catch the water, yeah. So that's really good. There's another thing you can do with your washing up bowl, actually, if you've done a load of washing, even if it's a bit soapy and a bit dirty, you can still chuck it on your plants in your garden, because actually the soap has phosphorus in it, so it's like a free plant food anyway. So that's something you can do, and I've been doing that over the past few weeks, carrying out the washing up bowl and chucking it on the plants. Any other ideas, people? Yes. We know the rhyme, do we? If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Yeah. What about... Yeah. It's good. The other one is to do your morning wee in the shower. I've been doing that for years. It's fine. Yeah.
I've never seen you do that.
We in the shower. Why not? Maybe not the bath, but the shower's okay. What about who, you can be honest here, who fills up the kettle all the way to the top every time you make a cup of tea? Even if you only need a couple of mugs. Good. Either you're too shy. Jacob never fills up the kettle anyway. Okay.
Yeah, he does when you tell him to make a cup of tea. So that's a lesson for you. Don't make
any other ideas? Yeah. Hopefully none of us are doing that by now.
Don't wash the car.
Wash the car less often. Wash the car with a bucket of water instead of the hose pipe. Let all the seagulls poo on it.
Exactly.
Yeah. The other thing you can do, actually, in terms of watering your plants outside, is if you water them early in the morning or late in the evening, the water evaporates less, especially on these really hot summery days. So don't water your plants in the middle of the day. The other thing is about hidden water that we use, so things that aren't quite so obvious. So what about what we eat? So different things we eat have been produced with different amounts of water, which we learnt about in the quiz. Lentils. I'm not saying give up lentils. I'm just saying if we think about what we're eating. So you eating animals uses more water because you've got to use water to grow the crops to feed the animals, and you've also got to use the water to care for the animals. So if you eat plants, it actually uses less than eating meat. Think about where your the things you buy in the supermarket have been grown. So if you look at particularly things like green beans or asparagus or monshtu, they're often grown in countries like Israel, which are taking water out of rivers and not leaving any for the countries further downstream. So there's all kinds of implications there about justice with water. It also takes less water to produce tea than it does coffee. So you could swap for tea a bit more than coffee. The other thing is virtually anything you buy from a shop has had to have water to make it. Yeah, from your mobile phone through to your clothes, anything you buy, it's had to have water. So how many litres does it take to produce enough cotton for one T-shirt, do we think? Anyone want to have a guess? How many litres of water? Cotton? It's 20,000 litres of water to grow enough cotton to make one T-shirt. So do think about that. The other thing is kind of these, I know it's good that we're not using single-use plastic bags, but I know I've got loads of these kind of tote bags, cotton tote bags, and they're almost disposable now. You get them wherever you go. They use loads of water to produce those. So using clothes made from bamboo takes much less water to grow bamboo than it does to grow cotton. So that's
no,
they're not wooden clothes. They turn the bamboo into a fabric. Yeah? So there's things we can do there. So there's lots of ideas. I wonder if we can each think of one thing we're going to do and write it on a post-it and stick it on our prayer flags, and that will be our prayers for the day. So I'll give you a few. What have you got, Charlotte? There's a few there. You there? Okay, Shana. There we are. I hope you've all had a chance to have a think and put some ideas down. Some of them falling off? Okay. So let's. My favourite one is Joel's, which is stop having a shower. Not sure how your family will feel about that. Okay. All right, so before we finish with the song, we've just got a prayer video reflection to watch on the screen. And this is a way of kind of bringing together all of our service, all of our thoughts about how we want to live our lives slightly differently, to use less water, and for all the people in the world that aren't as privileged as we are. So please have a look at the screens and read the words and make them your own. Sit down, and we've just got a blessing to finish, if you can put that on the screen, Jack. Okay, so this is from Isaiah 58, and I was looking through verses in the Bible around water, and this struck a chord with how our countryside is looking at the moment. Sun scorched our gardens, and you know, that has a spiritual dimension as well, doesn't it? So we are actually praying for rain, but we're also praying for rain, the Spirit, within our hearts and within our communities. So this is to bless you all. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Amen. Thank you all for listening, and thank you for praying for me while I was away. I really appreciate it.